headlines.
Red Sox now 38 games over 500 following a 5-2 win over the Blue Jays, and Xander Bogaerts is red hot.
Bogaerts' last 10 games, 378. 8 extra base hits. That's a shot.
Sox get a little bit of a break now. They will play the Detroit Tigers on Friday on the road, and they got a 4.5 game lead in the AL East. The Yankees fell 5-2 to the Indians yesterday. Celtics now out of the Las Vegas Summer League. They get eliminated by the Trailblazers in quarterfinal action, 95-80. Rookie Robert Williams III did not play. Team also waived guard Kadeem Allen. At the World Cup, France defeated Croatia 4-2. At Wimbledon, Novak Djokovic beat Kevin Anderson in straight sets, his 13th Grand Slam title overall. And David Ortiz, manager Big Papi, was in the dugout for Team World at the All-Star Futures game yesterday. His squad, however, lost 10-6. The Sports Hub headlines brought to you by the 99 Restaurants. They got 9 real size entrees for just $9.99. Make their balsamic grilled chicken, real meals at a real value. Only at the 99, always the real deal. I'm Sean Silver, Boston's Over Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for psychobabble horse crap.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Ryan Johnston and Mike Flynn in for Toucher and Rich here on this Monday morning. Quick news update for you. Trump and Putin have arrived at the presidential palace in Helsinki. That, of course, is Helsinki, Sweden. Finland. But this could be
it's
the...
It's not Helsinki, Ohio? No, no. You sure?
It's the Die Hard reference. Remember that?
No, I don't. Like, I was just going to reference
the
Die Hard.
The TV guy is talking about the, it's like
yes.
The, as in Helsinki, Sweden.
No, it's funny. I was checking Twitter and I guess Bruce Willis was at some event or a roast last night. And
was he playing the harmonica?
Yes.
Of course he was.
He thinks he's a musician, but he put to bed the debate about if, Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not, so we may have to get to that. I mean, that's the guy who was in it.
Oh.
So that's huge debate.
The answer, of course, is yes.
No, I know what he said, but we'll save it.
Well, I don't care what Bruce Willis said. I know what the answer is.
It matters what he says, right? He's the authority on it. He is the movie. So if there is a guy that's going to put the debate to rest, that's who I'm going to go with him. And that'll be my final answer, what Bruce, the harmonican playing son of a gun, says. But yeah, some roaster or something like that, but playing the harmonica. Remember when he came out with that, didn't he come out with an album?
That was in the 80s, though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, but he does it a lot, though. He may have more than one album.
You want to have fun, go back and look at his Seagram's Wine Cooler commercials.
Oh, I love that commercial. I love that commercial.
Seagram's golden wine coolers.
What's bad is this guy's like pubbing wine coolers. Could you get like this is a guy in Die Hard,
hey,
right?
You know what? It was the 80s, man.
Don't get
that's
me
what,
wrong, dude.
That's what people drank in the 80s.
I would sell my soul for a buck, but you know, you're Die Hard. You're jumping
a cool,
out of
manly
buildings.
Guy. You drink wine like, coolers. It was the 80s. That's what people drank.
And he's just like bragging that you're drinking wine coolers.
Had to make it cool.
Love that commercial. That was his only hit, I'd imagine.
It's the only song that he ever sang that you can remember the lyrics
to. That I liked.
Yeah. Mike, I saw a story yesterday about, you know, sports gambling is legal in some places in this country now. It is coming soon, perhaps, to a state near you. But the state of New Jersey opened up sports gambling middle of June. They took in roughly $1 million a day worth of bets. And that's outside of football season and basketball, like the sports that you really want to bet on aren't even going on right now. So the first couple of weeks, bringing in $1 million a day, not bad. But think about what that's going to be when.
Well, those are the degenerate guys that need to bet on something.
Right. But you're betting on those are people who are betting on World Cup games and Wimbledon matches and your occasional baseball.
When you get the football and basketball where it's easier, you know, those are easier to figure out what you're betting on and people think they know more than they do.
Like you're pulling in $1 million a day on World Cup bets. Like imagine what March Madness is going to do for you.
I like Croatia.
So. But there was a story the other day about an executive from the NFL Players Association who was speaking to gaming industry officials and state legislators about the concerns that the players in the NFL have for what sports gambling is going to do to how people treat them on and off the field. Because these guys have already gone through it with fantasy sports. You see this all the time. You spend any time on social media, you see this all the time where players are getting harassed on social media because they didn't have a good game and, oh, my fantasy team lost. And this gets that gets multiplied a whole lot more when you're talking about what people are wagering on a single game now. It's like, you know, you play fantasy. It's like, okay, you throw some money in a pot, and at the end of the season, maybe you get something out of it. So now you're talking about, well, no, you're going to throw a bunch of money down on a game on Sunday, and if you're, you know, the receiver on the team that you bet on has, you know, has a bad drop, like people are going to be sending out death threats to these guys. And that's what the Players Association is saying. Like, we're really concerned about the invasion of gambling into these guys' personal lives and private lives and what they're going to have to deal with because of this.
I mean, I think that's legitimate, right? When you think of sports gambling, the first thing is like, well, we can't do this, right? It's the integrity of the game. Somebody's going to throw a game. Gamblers, people that bet are going to get in with the teams. And like these guys get paid so much more money. It's not like the 1918
right.
White Sox
think about, they
made more money.
Gambling scandals are generally in college because you have kids who aren't making any money.
So, I mean, but initially that's what you're thinking, right? Like the integrity of the game. We don't want to compromise the game. And maybe that opens up the door a little bit because though you have more people throwing their hat in a ring and there's going to be more money involved. But casinos aren't doing that. It's small, you know, they're not going to like MGM Grant. They're not going to try to, you know, like fix games.
Right.
Like it's ridiculous. They don't need to do that. But the welfare, right? You mentioned fantasy football and a lot of the times it's social media, the backlash, stuff like that. I mean, when I was playing, if we lost a big game and you get real passionate fans, right? And there'll be times where somebody said something, there could be an altercation, right? But now you up the ante. Not only is it the passionate fan that you lose the game and this guy, you know, thinks he has a winner and throws his last $1,000 trying to break even. He loses that one because you dropped the ball or a blown coverage who could have been the coach's fault, could have been the safety's fault, but Collinsworth blames the quarterback. You know, seriously.
Yeah.
And now you're public enemy number one. All right. Now you're adding all to these people that, okay, you have a bad game, right? You're in a bar and nobody cares, right? They're not passionate fans there. But now you're a gambler that just lost a bunch of money. I think that's legitimate. I think there will be more backlash. It would just make more sense. If people are invested in the game more than emotionally, like now you're talking financially. I'm not saying people are going to, you know, it's going to be like Armageddon out in the street that guys need to get higher bodyguards, but I think that's a legitimate concern. I told you yesterday, I was reading that article. I'm like, you know, I never really thought about that because I was out of the game by the time like fantasy football really took hold. And it wouldn't matter anyway. I'm an offensive lineman, but the betting aspect of it, linemen would be more, you know, you give up a big sack on a third play or, you know, like there's a touchdown, right? And it's called
back. You
get
a holding penalty.
Because you get
right?
a holding yeah. penalty. I mean, I've seen it like where I've been with fellow linemen, like, hey, you're holding penalty. Like, these people are pretty knowledgeable that's a legitimate concern. Now, with that said, it's not going to stop. I mean, gambling's here. I mean, it's done. Like, people are going to make money. But I think from a player's point of view, for the agents, for the NFLPA, I think it's legitimate. Because people are nuts. They are. They take liberties anyway with athletes in public. They take liberties with any public person on Twitter.
Well, that's what
they... So now financially they're going to lose, and it's totally different.
Yeah, and that's what the president of the NFLPA is talking about, the dehumanization of athletes on social media. You know, and again, some of it becomes more public than that. It's when they're out, you know, they go out to dinner with their wife or something, and people are coming up to them and saying things, and you know most of us would go, like, who would do something like that? But there are people who do it, and they do it all the time.
I've seen it. I mean, not Jobs, but I'm saying, like, they're passionate fans, okay, that don't know how to control their emotions. But there are passionate... Listen, I'm the same guy. If I'm watching a Celtics game and something, I'm kicking the TV. I mean, I almost broke my hand with Horford when I was at, you know?
Yeah.
So far be it, but...
Mike almost broke his hand and a table at Hooters.
But with that said, well, I don't gamble, which helps, but if I see Al Horford, I'm not going to, like, get after him. I'm just like, it is what it is. But now when people are putting their money on the line, and trust me, you don't win with gambling. You're not breaking even. The house always wins, and it's going to get you eventually. And there are going to be a lot of people that are always trying to catch back up. You know, we'll work with Joe Murray. He knows about that, right? Oh, if I win this one, double or nothing, I'll break even, and then I'll really get going, right? And this guy does that two or three times, and he's in a legitimate hole where there's, you know, not like, hey, $50 on a game. If I win, I lose. But now it's thousands of dollars, and you can't pay for this and that. You don't think that guy's not going to tie one on? And God forbid he's downtown and sees, who knows? It's Gronkowski or Brady or you know, Andrews, who got called for a holding call. It could be more emotional than a win or a loss. You know, there's financial issues there. So it is an unintended consequence, as you've seen in terms of, and I like that, dehumanization of the player, because what people don't realize, and I understand, they make a lot of money. And when you get paid that kind of money, there's an expectation of perfection, but it's not reality. Not for anybody, not in this business or anything. You can't be perfect. But it's just like that one play now, you add the gambling element to it, and it's going to be closer to home, right? Before, unless you're going under the table, you'd be in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
So if you lost 10 grand, it's like you blow off steam, and by the time, you know, now if you're betting 10 grand on a Patriots game and you go out in Patriots place and there's a guy in the team that dropped the ball and he's having a beer with his family.
Well, we've talked
about
this.
You may say something.
When they were talking about this, when this first went through the Supreme Court, we talked about what the possibilities are with, you know, literally putting gambling parlors at the stadium.
At the stadium.
Right? Like, you would go to a Patriots game, and right there next to where you buy your hot dogs and your beer, there would be a betting window.
And the NFL doesn't care. They'll do it. They don't care about the safety.
If there's
the
money
players,
to be made,
they,
of course they're going to do it.
They're like, hey, just...
You know, they fought against gambling for all these years, and now as soon as it's legal, it's like, okay, well, we might as well embrace it now. I mean, they've gotten in bed with the fantasy football, like the daily fantasy football things. Ads are all over their games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This was the committee... I mean, if they're going to try to go to the league and legislate something, they're barking up the wrong tree there.
All right, we are going to get into a little basketball. Brian Robb of Boston Sports Journal is going to join us, talk some Celtics coming up next. Let's get our CBS Sports Minute brought to you by Tiger Home Inspection. It's Johnston and Flynn in for Tutcher and Rich.
So there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be outraged and shaking their fist this morning.
Happiness comes from feeling good about yourself.
Breaking the mold on sports radio in Boston.
Is that why I thought of Sesame Street?
Tutcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Johnston and Flynn in for Tutcher and Rich here on a Monday morning. The Boston Celtics eliminated from summer league contention last night. 95-80 loss to the Portland Trailblazers. Disappointing all of New England. We welcome in Brian Robb, who covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. And Tracy, I think we just lost B-Rob. So... working out the kinks on the new system. That was the one issue that we had yesterday. We're breaking in the brand new studio here in Dorchester. We shut down the old studio on Saturday, and Mike and I did the first show here yesterday. And that was like the one bug we seemed to have was with the phone system. Not important for call-in sports talk radio.
B-Rob's stint there shorter than that of Robert Williams III.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe B-Rob struggling to get out of bed this morning. So we are efforting getting him back. But we got.
I think it's a B-Rob issue.
Is it a bird issue?
I'm not sure.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement. I mean, the long pause, she would never, like, if you were questioning her, I'm not sure. I don't believe that. I think you know whose fault it was.
Well, B-Rob is, I see. B-Rob is now just calling in on a listener line. So, Bird will get him on hold so we can take him. Beautiful. Here we go. Brian Robb covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. What's up, B-Rob?
Well, good morning, boys. How's the new studios looking?
Doing well.
Works well. Smells good. Got no complaints so far.
So, good to hear.
So we saw you were here. You were here yesterday. You were not in. Did you not go to Vegas, or were you didn't decide to stay in Vegas for the full summer league tournament?
Yeah. So I was in Vegas. I threw the towel in on Friday in Vegas.
Fair enough.
7 days was the longest time I've been out there. There was no Utah this year to kind of buffer the Vegas experience. So, yeah, most people, I'd say maybe there are, you know, like 5 or 10 actual beat writers left by the time Friday rolls around.
Like, Vegas is, about a 4-day max. That's about as far as you can go. After that, you know, you need to get back to some semblance of reality and dry out for a few days. Anyway, we talked over the weekend, B-Rob, about Robert Williams. He doesn't get to play much during summer league because he bangs his knee up on the first night. We talked about the missed flight. Now the story's come out about him losing his wallet twice in like 24 hours. What are we doing here? What are we making of this kid?
I mean, this is kind of why he went 27, right? I mean, this is like cut and dry. And the good news for the Celtics, I think, is, you know, they don't need this guy to be ready to go next year, in the sense that their roster is so deep as it is that it would be somewhat of a surprise if he made a major impact right away. You already have, you have Horford, you brought back Baines, you have Daniel Tice, you still have Marcus Morris there. You didn't make any moves to kind of clear out the depth chart. So Williams is going to, you know, he has a talent, he has the athleticism, he just has to kind of get his head on straight here. And the team is going to, you know, put protocols in place to kind of make that happen. I had a conversation with him out, you know, in Vegas after all these incidents, and just to see where his head was at, and talking about like what the season's going to look like, because chances are he's going to spend a lot of time with the main Red Claws to get some reps there, and to kind of, you know, just work his way into the system eventually for when the team does need him a year or two down the line, that he'll be ready to give them something. So he sounded like, you know, he knows that's coming. He's like, he's ready to play wherever the team wants him to play. You know, he works hard when he's actually on the court. It seems like just talking to people, that now it's just a matter of, okay, can the team get the support system in place here to make sure that he can, you know, be a reliable player in the NBA.
I guess the question I have in that regard is he going to be worth it ultimately, right? All this stuff that they're going to have to do, and they're, you know, they basically assigned him a babysitter, and, you know, all of these things that you're going to have to do to try to get him to be a legitimate NBA player and get his head on straight, is it ultimately going to be worth it? Is he that good?
You don't know that yet. And at number 27 in the draft, you know, the odds are that, no, he's not going to be, you know, a serious contributor in the NBA down the line. He'll be like, you know, a bench player at best. But this is a guy that was projected for most of the last 2 years to be a lottery pick. So the upside potential is higher than it would be for most former number 27 picks. So I think, you know, it's clear that the shot blocking is there. It's clear that, you know, the athleticism and the finishing ability is there on lobs. And, you know, you put four shooters around him, that's going to, you know, create a lot of space for him in the paint. And, you know, give him a lot of opportunities down there that he didn't have in college when he was playing next to another true big that couldn't shoot at Texas A&M. So I think, again, it's probably going to take a couple years. He's pretty raw on the offensive end of the floor, doesn't really have much of a jumper right now. So all that's going to have to be worked on. But, yeah, I mean, they should have a pretty good idea in a couple, like maybe even as soon as later this season, okay, are these skills going to really translate to the NBA, or is this just going to be someone who's, you know, all flash and but it doesn't, you know, not a lot of substance?
Very quiet offseason. I mean, between Hayward and Irving and Danny Chaden, the number one pick, and now we're sitting here, you pick 27. There was a little buzz with the Kawhi Leonard talks, and obviously that's dying down, probably dead. But I think the Marcus Smart contract situation is important. I mean, really, since the trade to get those net picks, Danny Ainge has played pretty much everything right, and he has here. He knew the market, and certainly the value of Marcus Smart here is way more important than other teams. And I love his grit. I love what he's all about. You don't want to get in this luxury tax, but there is that window, right? I think they can, if they sign for like $8 or $9 million or something this year, they won't be hitting the luxury tax and everything. Is it realistic with Marcus Smart sees his market this year? It's probably going to be the same next year. Would the Celtics offer, and if they do, would Marcus Smart take a three-year deal in the $24 million range, or does Smart think he can get more than that?
From what I hear, Mike, Smart still thinks he can get more than that.
Okay.
And so I think the Celtics, you know, the Celtics would love to sign him for a three-year, $24 million deal, I feel like, right now, just because that prices him in something where, for the long term, he fits much better into their budget. Because, obviously, a lot of big deals coming up next year with Kyrie Irving, with potentially Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, et cetera. So you're going to have to, you know, just locking in a role player for just $8 million a year would be great by their standards. Smart clearly thinks he's more than that. He's, you know, slowly but surely reducing his demands, you know, going down from, you know, $12 to $14 million a year to probably saying, okay, 10 to 12, I'll take that. And the Celtics are still like, no, that's, you know, we're not going to give you that on a multi-year deal because we don't have to, because we can just sign you for the qualifying offer if you'll take it and then, you know, dodge the tax this year. So it's a huge problem for Smart's agent, Happy Walters. Unfortunately, the Celtics can do math. They can see right now that literally, like, maybe one team in the league, the Sacramento Kings, have enough cap room to give him that kind of an offer, and they don't have any interest in Smart. So it's a staring contest right now where the Celtics still have all the leverage. They're just going to wait to see if, you know, Smart will sign for a long-term number that they like, or they'll say, okay, you know, there's your qualifying offer for $6 million a year, and you can hit the unrestricted free agent market next year. And it's not, you know, he might have a lot of confidence in himself to bet that, hey, you know, I'll just sign that and get the long-term deal I want next year. But I don't think it's going to be that easy for him, guys, because all these guys are taking one-year deals this summer in hopes of, you know, getting that big deal next summer too. And that means nearly half of the league is going to be free agents next year. And that means it's going to be a really crowded market. So it's going to be a lot of pressure on guys to perform well this year because not everyone's going to get paid next summer too.
Well, you know, you've done a couple good articles, B-Rob, about that, about how all these guys signed in the one-year deals that Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier will be in the same boat. Let me ask you this. A guy in the roster who, Marcus Morris, who obviously was a big factor, needed factor at the end of the year, but $4.5 million salary. Do you see him potentially getting traded just because of the numbers game? You know, a lot of guys in the same position. And if he does get traded relatively soon, do you think, you know, now you're freeing up a little bit more space, do you think there'll be a little bit more of a compromise to get Smart back here? You know, kind of maybe you eliminate a body because of minutes, and then maybe they kind of go back to Smart and raise the salary a little bit?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's, you know, a potential guy to move just for that reason. You know, that's probably the easiest, you know, the most disposable number on the roster in terms of salary, because you do have depth there. You know, you still have Semi Ojeleye, who can kind of do a lot of things that Marcus Morris does defensively. But I do think that they aren't going to move him, Mike, unless they think they're improving as a team. You don't move, you know, Marcus Morris is, you know, a valuable, I feel like, defensive contributor. He's not someone who's going to be relied on as much this year, obviously, with Hayward and Irving back healthy. But, you know, that's a guy, if you can have off your bench, kind of spreading the floor.
Yeah, but is that going to work, though? I mean, you got to—he's like a free agent, you know. And
yeah, no, you're right.
At the end of the year, it seems like he got the minutes he wanted. 30. I don't know what he was playing, and he was effective. I feel like next year, he's a guy that's going to be, you know, eighth, ninth option type of guy. You mentioned Ojeleye, and I like him. I mean, who knows? What if he's that defensive guy off the bench? Like, I just feel like he's a potential where you're right. You're deep in that area, and he could be an issue because, you know, it's not a guy at the end of his career. He's not a guy with a few years left on his deal. I mean, he's a guy that's going to be a free agent. And, you know, if that becomes the issue when now he's going back to a reserve role, and even a guy like Rozier who got a taste of that starter's role. Like, I mean, I feel like this team could be good, but there are a lot of questions in terms of guys taking a back seat that people think, oh, it's Brad Stevens and we are a good team. We're just going to say, oh, this is great. But I think Morris could be one of those guys because he's playing for a contract.
Yeah, no question about it. And he actually mentioned that, Mike, at the end of last season, being like, I kind of wonder where I fit in right now for next year, just looking at it. It was kind of a similar situation to, like, Jay Crowder, I feel like, last summer before they moved him. But this time it comes with the free agent contract year worked in. So, you know, Morris is going to play. He'll still play, you know, 15, 20, 25 minutes a night as this roster stands, but, you know, Ojeleye, I think training camp's going to be big on that front. If Ojeleye shows that, you know, he can be not a huge offensive weakness when he's out there, that makes it easier to move Morris. So I kind of thought they might move him on draft night, but that market was not there. We'll see again if they get something that's worth moving him for. That's probably the main reason why I don't think they have moved him yet, but that could change during training camp. And then, so I think, but if I had to pick any guy to move before the start of next season, it would be Morris on that front.
All right, Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal. Appreciate you getting up with us this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, B-Rub.
We will get Sports Hub headlines here, and we will continue on this Monday morning. It's Johnston and Flynn in for Toucher and Rich.
We'll have our morning routine.
The kids ain't going to learn nothing.
Thanks for making Toucher and Rich part of yours.
That's right, baby.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okie dokie, let's go.
And Johnston and Mike Flynn here with you on a Monday morning in for Toucher and Rich. Fred's on vacation. Rich and Wallach are taking part in the Sports Hub Hoosier Caddy Classic today, the golf tournament up in Atkinson, New Hampshire.
Oh, to New Hampshire now.
Yeah. Has been for the last couple of years, I think.
Well, okay. Well, the only one I went to was not New Hampshire. Why do they, I guess maybe the guys from the hub need to get up there while they start a golf tournament so late. It's like 12:45, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be there by like noon. And then I don't know what time the actual tee time is, but
12:45.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was usually tournaments get done a little earlier during the
start. Well, they used to start in the morning, which is why it wasn't, you know, we would fill in on the morning show because, like, they would tee off at, like, 9 o'clock in the morning. But now it's an afternoon event. So, you know, people can maybe even work half a day and then head out and go play golf. Except for the people here because they just
take the whole day off. Perfect.
We were talking with Brian Robb of Boston Sports Journal about the Celtics and a little NBA. I love these things because we see it all the time around here with, you know, Brady has become a big one on Instagram and, you know, he's commenting on things and he's liking things and you try to read into some of the codes that Gronk puts out there on his social media. There was a thing the other day. And this actually potentially impacts the Celtics. Jimmy Butler, who just turned down a contract extension, which is probably what he should have done because, you know, financially it's one of those things where it didn't make sense for him to, you know, to sign the deal now. But somebody commented the other day on social media that you and Kyrie coming to the Knicks in 2019. And Jimmy Butler hit the like button, Mike.
Well, because I don't think he likes Minnesota.
Well, no, but I mean, the Knicks, I know. And it's, you know, look, the Knicks are, it's New York City, obviously. We all know that. But it's the Knicks. It's a terrible organization. It's a terribly run organization. The only thing that they have going for them is that they play in Madison Square Garden in the middle of New York City. And yet we've heard the rumors about Kyrie wanting to go to the Knicks. And now, you know, Jimmy Butler says, you know, I wouldn't mind playing with Kyrie in New York. And now, you know, so now you wonder, like, is there legs to this? Is that, you know, because this is how super teams work in the NBA. Guys get together, they talk to each other during the offseason, and they say, we got to find a place where we can play together. And well, they end up going to New York and they play with Porzingis.
Well, there was, and, you know, we talked about, you know, when free agency started, there was a time where there was trades, free agency, these big guys, they really didn't move. Like, you looked at the percentage of the guys that moved, it didn't happen. It does. It happens a lot. And now, you know, the last couple of years, and they take less money. Paul George is an example. LeBron James. So as much as you want to hammer a guy for, you know, going to join a team or not sticking it out with the team you're drafted with, these guys are taking financially a lot less, whether it's Durant to Golden State. Even the initial move when LeBron went to the Heat, he took less money. They all took less money. So, yeah, there's a possibility. But you look at some, like Indiana, Paul George wants to go to L.A., LeBron and Cleveland, these teams that move, like, what's the state of their franchise that they're leaving from? Like, it's easy to say, like, yeah, we offer you the most money. I mean, to me, that's important. And it is, if your franchise is built to win. So it's not so much I'm worried about Kyrie Irving leaving. I mean, hell yeah, it's a possibility. He's a free agent. He's going to want to get wined and dined. He's going to want to go to New York. And I'm sure he wanted to play there at one point. I mean, New York and L.A., there's always going to be a fascination because of the lifestyle and the nightlife. And, hell, I'd probably be the same way. But if you could pay him the most money by far, and the Celtics are an organization, realistically, Kyrie Irving, how could you look at the Knicks and say, all right, get more money with the Celtics. I'm going to win more with the Celtics. Like, what's the draw? You know, with LeBron, like, I think the LA move was more of a lifestyle, but it's not like you can look at Cleveland and say, hey, if I stay here, we're going to win more. Not. They stunk. They stunk. They shouldn't even got to the E. I'm still disappointed about that loss of the Celtics. I figured they were a better team except for LeBron. But I'm not worried about that. But the only, you know, with the offseason being so slow, there was a lot of rumblings and talk, and it came out he wanted to play with Kyrie Irving. But he does not like Minnesota. I mean, and you could see it, Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. I don't think he...
Apparently, he doesn't like the young guys. Doesn't think they take it seriously.
Well, that was... take it seriously. That was, doesn't have, like... And
that was the listen, report Butler's that he didn't like... Guy. He didn't like Karl Anthony Towns' yes. nonchalant attitude.
And that would piss me off if I was Butler, because he's a gritty guy. And he's played for Thibodeau, who, you know, love or like his style, and it's questionable how much he plays his service, but he's a gritty guy.
He's a gritty
defensive
coach.
Guy.
Yeah.
He's a grinder, right? And he loves Butler, and that's his guy, and Butler's like that. And thought of me, you know what? There's all this talk about Kawhi Leonard. Like, that's like one of these under-the-radar moves that Ainge would, and you know, maybe going to Minnesota, the asking price is less, on and on and on. Because if there is some sort of rift between Towns, Wiggins, and Butler, like, Butler's got to go. He has to, because you're already paying Wiggins. Never get rid of that contract. And Karl Anthony Towns is a unique talent, right?
He's
a franchise guy. He's going to play better defense. He could score. Like, you can't get rid of him.
It's interesting to me, Mike, from a competitive balance standpoint, a lot of people are saying, like, eliminate the max contract and just pay the stars, you know, whatever you can. There's no limit. And you got all these superstars here who are walking away from the highest possible contracts that they can get, the supermax.
Yes.
So, you know, how's that going to help, say, the Milwaukee Bucks or, well, not them, they already have Giannis, but say another team who's looking to land a marquee free agent. If players don't want to go there, they're just not going to go there.
Yeah.
Unless they're traded.
Yeah, there was a point, and that's why they changed the rules, right? The max and the bird rights, right? You could sign your own guy more than anybody else can, give him the extra year. But and I think I like that rule in place, because I don't care who you are, to give up 40 or 50 million, even if you're making 150 million, $50-60 million. I don't, you know, like, it's not like, an easy decision. You think, well, you know, like, people that obviously don't make that kind of money, they can't fathom. But when you have the opportunity, what it's put in front of you. So it is a big decision. But just, you know, where you can go anywhere you want and unlimited cash like baseball, I feel like those teams really would get squeezed out.
All right, we will get to one of our favorite events of the year happened last night. We will talk about that coming up next. It's Johnston and Flynn in for Toucher and Rich.